Hi, this is Todd Fields with the Worship Circle Podcast. I'm your host and so grateful that you're listening along with us for this episode that we can't wait for you to hear. But first of all, real quick, we exist for you to know you're loved and not alone. Ministry can be lonely. It can be hard. It can be just taxing with all the output, all the serving. And I found years ago that I hadn't really paid a whole lot of attention to my heart and my soul because there's always a job to do. So we exist to call you to authentic community where you can have a safe place in small group to be seen, heard, loved, and cared for. We've got a brand new term coming up. It's term 18. We're in the back half of our ninth year of ministry. And you, as a podcast listener, are on the front end of the remaining few spots in each small group that are open right now. So if you want to go right now to worshipcircle.com/program, and it's there that you're going to be able to get your application in. They're going to be accepted in the order they're received. We would love to meet you in small group and have you be part of our tribe. And once you apply, our team members will reach out to you, and we can have a conversation with you on Zoom or phone, hear more about your story, and really just help you with anything you have a question about with Worship Circle and help make it a reality for you. We're super excited this term because we have two brand new female coaches, mentors. The first is my friend Laura Story from Perimeter Church here in the Atlanta area. Laura's been a friend for years and just brings so much into this ministry with her life experience, ministry experience, family experience, and we can't wait for you girls who are going to be able to be in Laura's small group. And also Melody Malone from Passion City Church and the Passion Band. We love Melody. She was at our rest retreat this past year just hanging out with friends, and we love her heart, we love her leadership and what God's done in her life, and can't wait for some of you ladies to be able to be in her small group as well. So welcome, Laura. Welcome, Melody. And for all of you who are thinking about jumping in, go ahead and apply. We'll begin that conversation and we'll help you in any way we can for Worship Circle to be a reality for you in term 18. I'm really excited. I'm excited about all of our guests, but today is just a personal friend and someone I have a lot of history with. His name is Jeff Henderson, and for years when I worked at North Point Community Church and in the Ministries Network there in Atlanta, Jeff was the pastor of Buckhead Church and then also next Gwinnett Church. And just along the way, he's been just an incredible friend, always encouraging, just one of those guys that, on my journey, that's been kind of alongside cheering me on. And Jeff's got some new books he's written. He's written two, and they're both just super practical and super helpful for not only your church, but for you personally. And we're going to get into a conversation about those books and the heart of them, where they came from. But it's just my joy and honor to have a good friend with some deep history and rich history. Jeff Henderson to the Worship Circle Podcast today. We love you, Jeff, and we're grateful for this time that you sat down with us to share a little bit of your heart, your story, and your life. Well, hey, everyone. We are in the Worship Circle headquarters office in downtown Alpharetta with a longtime friend of mine, Jeff Henderson. Jeff, welcome to the Worship Circle Podcast.
Todd, great to be here, man. Great to see you again.
It's been a while. We've caught up. We had coffee. You've been on a great journey just through your life of following God in different seasons and different things. But before we get into that journey, I just want to, right off the bat, say you're probably greatest part of your life is your wife, Wendy.
Absolutely.
And then Cole and Jesse, your kids.
Right.
And being a dad, being a parent. And we just got so many good years and different seasons of our life seeing you guys kind of on parallel ministry tracks, and really grateful for y'all and the way you've encouraged us through the years. So thank you right off the bat.
Well, our pleasure. I tell you, you've had a huge impact on us, you know, and our journey. I don't even know if you know this, but your song, Wake the World, way back in the day, made a big difference when I was leaving Chick-fil-A to go help launch, the early days of Buckhead Church. Really leaned into that, because a lot of people were saying, no one ever leaves Chick-fil-A. Like, you're stupid and crazy,
right.
You know? And so, but your ministry, your songs, that one in particular, and it's just had a big impact.
Thank you, man.
Not only on Wendy and me, but our kids.
Yeah. Oh, that means a lot. Well, I'm so excited about this interview, and it's the first time we sat down, even though we've kind of done similar ministry things together before. But just after some years and after you following God through different seasons of your journey, I'm excited for you guys listening because Jeff, he's just been able to be around some really encouraging and gifted people and to lead different things. And it's just going to be good to get into this conversation. But you mentioned Chick-fil-A. How did first of all, I got to start with this. Was it basketball? You wanted to be a pro basketball player?
Yes. Why do you laugh?
No, it's funny. I think I've heard you talk about that before, and it's like, why is it sometimes the thing we dream about doing is the one that we're physically
incapable of doing? Incapable. Yes. Well, yeah, I have a friend, Mark Price, who actually did make it to the NBA and did very, very, very well. You know, played at Georgia Tech, and so I've kidded Mark over the years that he lived the life I wanted to live back in the day, but my basketball career ended at that basketball powerhouse, Truett McConnell Junior College in Cleveland, Georgia. And it's funny though, I wanted to play for the Atlanta Hawks, lead them to their first NBA championship. They never drafted me. But I also point out that they still have yet to win an NBA championship. But my mom, who's 95, watches every Hawks game. Yeah. She and her favorite player is Trae Young. And we had the opportunity to go to a game, and she got to meet Trae Young. And what was so funny, Todd, is that the Hawks posted that on social media. Trae Young posted that on social media, their picture. The NBA, with their 41 million followers on Twitter, posted that.
Unbelievable.
So my mom was featured in the NBA and I wasn't. So there you go. So
your mom, I was going to mention your mom because you know the Tim Tebow story.
Yes.
And then the trade. Your mom has probably gotten more press time than any of us ever will, just because she's a big sports fan.
And trying to explain to my mom that she went viral, she doesn't really understand that. So anyway, so grew up in Atlanta and didn't make it there, but still definitely cheer on for the Hawks.
What got you to the Chick-fil-A marketing job? Because a lot of people, if you've not met Jeff before, he was in marketing for Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm.
So I was a preacher's kid, and I promised myself I would never, ever work at a church.
Okay.
And so
it started with that.
Yes, yes. And my dad told me, my dad and I, when I was a junior in high school, where I learned to speak was we would travel around and I would go speak to youth groups. We would preach together.
Oh, wow.
Which was just fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, to have that memory with your dad.
I didn't know you did that. That's amazing.
We did that over 200 times at 200 churches. And I would go speak to the youth, and he would go speak to the adults, and then we would co-preach together. And I mean, it was so great because I just learned how to communicate. And I'm sure I delivered some of the worst sermons in the history of the church, but I was learning.
Yeah.
My dad told me, if you can do anything else and still have a peace about that, go do that. You don't have to do this church stuff. And I, as we just talked about, still a huge sports fan.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you could do sports marketing. So long story short, I actually ended up working for a season with the Atlanta Braves and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did promotions, you know, like Coca-Cola Bat Night and Kentucky Fried Chicken Cap Night or whatever. Mm. And I love doing that. So that got me on a journey of marketing and promotions, and worked for a couple of other organizations. And one of which is Lakeland Air Islands, which is a resort here in Atlanta. And we would do some promotions with Chick-fil-A. That's where I met David Salyers.
Okay.
And we became good friends. And he said, hey, we're launching this cow advertising campaign. Why don't you come help join us? And so I left there and just loved it.
Yeah.
So my role at Chick-fil-A was I did regional marketing, which was Chick-fil-A was a regional brand at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our strategy was sports marketing because most of the Chick-fil-A restaurants at that time were in the, if you're familiar with college sports, for your listeners, the Southeastern Conference and the Atlantic Coast Conference. So
right.
We became a college sports sponsor, and I got to lead all that, which was just a dream come true. I managed our beverage marketing relationships as well, and never thought I would leave Chick-fil-A. But David invited me to a leadership conference at Willow Creek Community Church, and this has never happened to me before, and I don't know if it's ever happened to me again, but I went out. I just had never seen anything like this before, and I went out to the lake out at South Barrington, and I felt like the Lord said, you're going to start a church someday.
Yeah.
And I thought, no. I promised myself I'm never going to do this. And so So long story short, I came home and told that to Wendy, and I said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. And she said, well, if you feel like this is what the Lord's calling us to do, let's do it. Yeah. And we were not going to North Point. We didn't, you know, and so we decided, I said, the only church I can know of in this area that I think that's like the church I just saw is this church that I've heard of called North Point Community Church. And so went there, you were leading worship, and 3 years later, I resigned from Chick-fil-A to join the early days of Buckhead Church. So a lot more to that story, but that's, you know, that's, and that was my journey to that.
So you were at the warehouse, what we called it, the Buckhead. No, was it a grocery store?
It was a grocery store.
You guys converted into the church. Mm-hmm. What were some of the things kind of coming into that were, you feel like you could bring into that world from what you had come out of a Chick-fil-A?
My initial response in thinking of this is the weirdest career move. I'm starting all over. You know, and it's I go from a chicken salesman to being a pastor. But what I quickly realized, and my dad taught me this, the Lord's going to take what you've done,
right,
and He's going to. It's all part of the story. And it was very early on when I realized, oh wow, the same issues that I saw at Chick-fil-A in terms of, it's not issues, but opportunities, leadership, and all that. It's the same thing here. It's not that different. Yes, there's a difference between church and business. I get all that. But there are a lot more similarities than there are differences.
Right.
So I began to discover that what the Lord had written in my particular experience, that being primarily in the business world, although knowing the church world, that's what He was leveraging here.
Yeah.
And I wanted to create a great place to work because I'd seen that at Chick-fil-A. Right. And all that, being dipped in the Chick-fil-A culture for 6 years.
Yeah.
And even really longer, Wendy kids me, she said, you know, you never really left Chick-fil-A because I'm always around them, you know.
Yeah.
I was at their corporate convention in San Diego a couple weeks ago. And I just realized, oh, all the stuff that the Lord led me through that I didn't know. I thought, Lord, this doesn't make any sense or seems like a right turn. My dad would tell me, it's going to seem like that now, but you're going to look back and go, oh, that's what the Lord was doing.
Yeah.
In fact, when my dad passed away 10 years ago this month. Mm. And, but when he turned 80, he said, son, I love being 80.
Wow.
And I thought, that's interesting. I don't really hear that a lot.
Most people
don't.
And
I said, why do you love being 80? He goes, I now can look back on the twists and turns in my life and see what God was doing the whole time.
Yeah.
You can't see that at your age right now.
Yeah.
You just have to keep trusting and make the best decisions that you can. And so my route to what I was doing maybe was a little unconventional, but it's what the Lord used, I think, to help me in those years.
You mentioned this. We're going to talk about a book you wrote called What to Do Next in a second. But I want to pause here and just kind of hit on this because you're moving from Chick-fil-A to ministry world. And one of the things that I heard you say years ago that I kind of brought into my world is this idea of a personal board. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that. Just did you have one in place at that point in your life? Is that something you learned later? Because I want people listening to go, wait, I can have a personal board, just to seek wise counsel and get people that know you to speak into.
I did not have it when I was leaving Chick-fil-A to Buckhead Church in the kind of organized sense that I did now.
Right.
But I firmly believe, like, when we left, I wanted to get my parents' approval, my in-laws' approval, and I had a mentors that everybody was giving me a green light, and primarily Wendy. And so if you're married and you're making a decision like this and your spouse is not in agreement, I would stop. And here's why. When you make that move and you're going to have good days and you're going to have challenging days.
Mm-hmm.
When in those challenging days, when you go to your spouse or they come to you and go, that's just challenging, and you were in disagreement on this move, one of you could say, well, I told you we shouldn't do this.
Right.
So in every move, I wanted to get a green light from the significant people. But in my years at Buckhead Church, I discovered this idea from Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great, that he had a personal advisory board. And he said, if Coca-Cola has an advisory board and they're just selling sugar water, and I love Coca-Cola because I'm from Atlanta, don't you think with your one solitary life, you should have a personal advisory board? And that was very convicting. And so while I was at Buckhead Church, there were four guys that I really looked up to. I wanted to have I wanted my marriage to be like their marriage when I was their age. I wanted my kids to grow up like their kids. I wanted to, you know, be in the financial situation that they were in and all that. And I just approached them and said, would you, the four of you, be on my personal advisory board? And I would meet with them for breakfast. Once a year, Wendy would come in and sit in on these meetings. Mm-hmm. And they were pivotal on significant decisions, such as when we decided to leave Buckhead to help launch Gwinnett Church.
Right.
They were in that decision. And it wasn't always decisions. It was just processing things that were going on.
Right.
And many times when I came to these meetings and I had something that was bothering me, let's say, just saying the words out loud was helpful to another human being.
Yeah.
Because sometimes hearing yourself say things out loud, you're like, why am I bothered by that? But then when you would say things out loud and the board would say, yeah, if that were me, I would be bothered by that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's valid. And then when I left North Point to do what I'm doing now, they were in that decision as well. So just having wise mentors that you're meeting with on a regular basis was just incredibly helpful to me. And I've got other mentors outside that board, but this idea of having a personal advisory board is really important, but it's one of those important, not urgent things.
Yeah.
You know, and but I always felt like, I just got convicted that if Coca-Cola has a board, you should.
Do you ever feel like there's not enough time? You're always pouring out, always serving, always going to meetings. There's so many things involved in ministry life. And I know that was my story for so many years, just doing things Sunday after Sunday, Sunday's coming. And I'd really never paid attention to my heart. That's how this whole thing started. It's called Worship Circle. For you to know that you're loved and not alone. We have mentors waiting for you who will walk with you, see you, and you can come as you are. It's a safe space to be seen, known, loved, and cared for. Go to worshipcircle.com/program to apply. We have a brand new term about to start, but you have time to get one of these remaining spots in small group if you go now. Someone on our team will reach out as soon as your application comes in. Don't let anything stand in the way. We can break down barriers, whether they be financial, time. We're here to help you to know that you're loved and not alone. I wanted to hit on this question, Jeff, because you've been a lead pastor. And oftentimes in worship circle world, we'll have worship leaders say, how can I build more trust with my lead pastor? How can I, you know, make a path, or are there things I can do that will allow us to become more of a collaborative team versus a, you know, you're down in that department and I'm a, you know, just in your experience, are there things you learned along the way that help with that, or voice, you know, you spoke into kind of the direction and they spoke back into you with worship?
Mm-hmm. I think making sure that you understand the organizational weight that a lead pastor is having.
Mm-hmm.
In many churches, there's one person that wakes up thinking about the finances.
Yeah.
Especially if they don't have an executive pastor. If there's an executive pastor, then there's possibly two people. And if we're not careful in the worship world, we can kind of think that's not as important because, you know what, we're gonna run after Jesus and we're gonna pursue Jesus, which I'm all for.
Right.
At the same time, there is the organizational weight and being cognizant of how is giving. What's the organ? There's an organizational reality to a church, and if you dismiss that, then what happens is that there's one person that carries that weight.
Mm.
So I think becoming a leader that understands the reality of the organization and helping that lead pastor carry the weight, and then understanding what this lead pastor feels called to do from a worship standpoint and from a preaching standpoint.
Yeah.
And then letting the lead pastor know that we want to help you as much as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And I do think, this is a little bit outside your question, I do think that in the church world, we have dismissed preparation as being unspiritual.
Yeah.
And the more prepared I am, the less I'm being reliant on the Holy Spirit. And I think that's actually the exact opposite.
Yeah.
So helping the lead pastor being a little bit more prepared, and I know that's maybe a challenge, but to say, hey, if we're 2 to 3 weeks out, I can help. You know, that can help me, but what's the goal for this series? What's the goal for, you know, for the church, and how can I help you? And then how can I be a friend?
Yeah. I think for those of us in the music seat, a lot of times we don't think about the bottom line that the lead pastor is carrying and the weight of the entire staff and healthcare. Like, there's so many things to think about with how that goes. You talked about the preparation piece, and I'd love to ask you about this, because as you're talking, and you guys listening that are worship leaders, you know, sometimes you fight for, well, I'm just going to show up and God's going to do his thing. And, but I've learned from you, the more prepared you are, honestly, the more likely that something special is going to happen, because you've prepared your heart, you've prepared your mind, like you really feel good on the front end. You've sat with the Lord and said, I feel like this is where we're supposed to go today, and that's a win.
So this is my perspective, Todd, so take this for what it's worth. And when I hear we're just going to rely on the Holy Spirit today, this morning on Sunday, I get that.
Yeah.
I think you can rely on the Holy Spirit on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And this isn't to say that you don't throw, we got a plan, but I'm not going to do this today. Yeah. I think that needs to happen from time to time.
Yeah.
But I think there is I think the Lord is honored by our hard work and diligence.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example where I mentioned my dad and I would travel around when we were when I was growing up. This had a significant impact on my idea of preparation and that the Lord honors preparation. So my dad was my greatest encourager. Like, if my dad were there at a sermon and I would walk down the platform or whatever, and he would put his hands on my shoulder, kiss me on the cheek, and say, "Son, that was the greatest sermon I've ever heard."
Wow.
And Wendy, every time. And Wendy would say, "You ever notice that every time your dad hears you preach, it's the greatest sermon he's ever heard?"
That's amazing.
Because it's true, babe.
Yeah.
So one time when I was a high school, young preacher, we were driving away and my dad didn't say anything. It was silence in the car. And he said, "You weren't prepared today, were you?" I was like, "No, sir." And he goes, "Well, here's what we have to understand, that the people that came to church today, they trusted you with their time. They didn't have to come to church today.
Yeah.
They could have gone anywhere. And they were giving you the gift of their time. Not only that, the Lord gave you the privilege of speaking on his behalf. Let's be prepared from now on."
Yeah.
"Yes, sir." I've never forgotten that.
Yeah.
Now, I think there are times, to be honest, I have gone in the other direction. I have overcooked a message.
Yeah.
So I have to be careful. I'm not underprepared. Sometimes I'm too prepared.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I've had to balance that out. At the same time, I do feel like the Lord honors preparation.
Yeah.
And both from a worship standpoint and from a preaching standpoint.
Yeah.
And I just feel like the more prepared I am, I'm not worried about what's coming next, because I know what's coming next. But then the Lord, and I think it's the Holy Spirit, gives me a thought, gives me an idea that I had not thought of in that, because I'm so prepared.
That's
I just feel
good.
Like the more prepared you are, the more spontaneous you can be.
Yeah.
And when I work with communicators early on, they're like, "Oh, you're trying to put handcuffs on me and getting me to prepare." No, I'm actually trying to free you up.
Wow, that's a good...
Because I loved waking up on Sunday, not having to worry about, and that's the other thing. I feel like when you put... I'm talking about sermons right now, but I think the same is true for worship. When you put the sermon in the crock pot for a few days and it simmers, it just tastes better than trying... I mean, I push back on preachers that are starting their message prep on Friday and it's 48 hours later. And that's one of the things I appreciate about Andy Stanley is he's 3 weeks out. He's 3 weeks out. And obviously he's an off the chart communicator, but he has not relied solely on his gifting to wing it.
Yeah.
And so I think there is this spiritual gift of discipline that we can lean into.
Yeah. We talk about it, or circle, a lot of us have lost trust with our team, with our lead pastor, because we're trying to set up a song and it's like flying around an airport, not landing the plane. You're like, "Which direction are you going in?" And we try to work with our leaders just to say, "Hey, it's a really good thing to get with the Lord, pray through this, look at where you're going, where you feel like God's leading with the songs, and then, man, make it personal." Personal is powerful. And so many people can get up to intro a song and talk about a truth, but a truth made personal is all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, from a communicator standpoint, I would tell the folks I coach, we can see through you.
Yeah.
Don't try to think you can outsmart the audience. We can see whether you really believe this and this is really powerful or you're just up there trying to sell us something.
Yeah.
And I say this to business folks as well.
Yeah.
Are you really selling a product that you don't buy?
Yeah.
We can, if you're selling a product that you don't personally buy, we can see that. Don't think that you can fool us. Yeah, you might be really gifted on stage.
Wow.
But especially if you go see someone on a regular basis, we can tell whether it's authentic or not. So don't try to sell us something that you have not already bought. I would say, back to your earlier question about how can worship pastors help serve their lead pastors, I think the more you can understand who they are and their wiring.
Yeah.
And I think personality tests, I'm not one necessarily that leans toward personality tests, because sometimes I think they can lead to excuses. Oh, I'm this number,
right,
and that means I can't do this. Okay, I got to be careful with that. But the more that we understand who we're working with, the better we're going to be able to serve them. A quick example, when I worked at Chick-fil-A, I actually had two bosses, Steve Robinson, who was the senior VP of marketing, and David Salyers, who I worked with more closely, mm-hmm. who was VP of marketing. David and Steve were different. Mm. And I really really had a great relationship early on with David, but not as close with Steve. But I realized that I was treating Steve like David. Those two guys are different.
Yeah.
David wanted all the details. He wanted to be it in person.
Right.
Steve was like, just give me high level and, you know, just send me an email.
Yeah.
And when I began to understand, oh, I can serve Steve this way because I know how he works and how his personality is. And I can work with David this way because this is how his personality is and this is how he works. It just made all the difference.
Yeah.
So the more you can understand someone's wiring, and the more you're going to serve them better.
That's so good. And before you said that, you talked about not like using a product or that you haven't, you know, you're trying to sell a product that you haven't bought. I just taught last week at our summit about that. And
wow.
it was the thing God gave me for the beginning. So many of us are trying to sell people on a relationship and a connection to God that we say we have. And we do that on the stage, but then when we get off, and it's not a shame thing and it's not a you ought to thing. It's just, we've got the opportunity to know him all the time and it'd be intimately acquainted with him and him with us. And mm-hmm. people can tell.
Yes, absolutely.
They can tell when you're doing your shtick. Versus, man, this is coming from the heart.
They can. The audience is smarter many times than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
And the more gifted you are on stage,
yeah.
the more comfortable you are on stage, the more you're apt to think, I can fool them.
Yeah.
And you can maybe one Sunday or two, but over time, I think they can see through that.
Huh.
And basically see through whether you really truly believe this and whether you're truly practicing this.
So you moved from Buckhead Church to Gwinnett Church, started that. About that time, I was at North Point. I started hearing this For Gwinnett slogan, and I'm like, what's For Gwinnett? This is your kind of a message that you, I want to hear just how you came up with that.
Sure.
You wrote a book called Know What You're For, and then what season did that come out of, and how did that all take place?
Well, Andy had asked me to leave Buckhead to help start Gwinnett.
Right.
We had realized there are a lot of people from Gwinnett County, which Gwinnett County will be the largest county in the state of Georgia in about 2 to 3 years now. So it's the most diverse county in the state of Georgia. So there are a lot of people from Gwinnett traveling over to North Point.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, let's just launch a campus over there. So Andy asked if I would leave Buckhead to help start Gwinnett. And I'm a starter, so I love starting things, you know, which I know doesn't make a whole lot of sense sometimes. But our mutual friend Louis Giglio said, are you sure you want to do this? You're starting all over. And Buckhead's like the coolest church building in America. That was his words, not mine.
Yeah.
But I'm like, but I think I'm a starter. So, and one of the things people told me was, hey, you've done this lead pastor thing before. You'll just, you know, it's
going to
be great. And there's certain, you know, principles that you can lean on, but my prayer was, God, do something different or do something fresh, do something new. I don't want to depend on my experience. I want to depend on you. Now I can leverage the experience, but like I feel like I did at Chick-fil-A, but I want to bring something, I want you to do something new. And so we just started with the quiet, just a handful of us. It was just Krista Franklin, Lauren Espy, and Al Causey and Cliff Hatfield. And we said, hey, what do we want to be known for? And in that meeting, someone said, well, you know, when it comes to the church, many people are more familiar with what the church is against rather than what the church is for. And that for me, not to overstate this, but for me, that was a really holy moment.
Absolutely.
I'm like, you know, because, and the reason I say it was a holy moment, because it really touched my heart, and go, that's true.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, what do we want to be known for? Wow. And we said, well, we want to be known for being, we didn't really have the name for the church too much at this point. We want to be known for being Four Gwinnett students, and we're Four Gwinnett adults and Four Gwinnett businesses. Yeah. And then when I kept hearing that, I'm like, that's it. That's what so we want to be known for. And so, and here's the thing, and it goes back to my, what my dad was saying, and for right or wrong, North Point hired a marketing guy in me. And so I, when I saw that, I thought, not only is that true, I know how to do this.
Yeah.
This is going to be our brand and positioning.
That's great.
Statement.
Yeah.
And so when we bought the property where the first, there are two Gwinnett churches we launched for the property for the first one, the city that we were in said, hey, you could put a sign up and say, Gwinnett Church coming soon.
Right.
And that's exactly what I did not want to do.
Yeah.
And here's why. That road, there are a lot of people travel up and down that road where the church is now. And the first impression I didn't want them to think of was a church. I wanted them to be brought in. So we just put up a sign and just said hashtag Four Gwinnett.
Yeah.
There's no website, no Bible verse, none of that. And I got a little bit of pushback, which I totally understood. It was like, how are they going to know that's a church? It just says hashtag Four Gwinnett. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
And my response was, exactly, they're not.
Yeah.
They're going to have to go online and search hashtag. What does that
mean? What does that mean?
And then we just had, you know, a couple hundred volunteers at the time, and we gave them shirts that said Four Gwinnett. And I said, mm-hmm. Okay, I want you to go to the ballparks, the restaurants, the, you know, wherever you go and wear these shirts. And people are going to ask you, okay, Four Gwinnett, there's a big building that's being built up here. Mm-hmm. What are they saying? What is that? What is it, a residential subdivision? Is it a building? Is it a business?
Yeah.
And what I tell leaders, Todd, is that whatever our volunteers said next is gold.
Yeah.
And if you didn't give them language to be able to articulate what the mission and vision of the church was, then I feel like I had failed as a leader. But so I wanted to give them language, and the language was, well, it's a church.
Yeah.
Why is it a church? Well, why does it say Four Gwinnett? Well, many people are more familiar with what the church is against rather than what the church is for. And what we've discovered is that God is for you.
Yeah.
Well, those conversations just exploded the church. And then a couple of years later, I started getting coffee mugs in the mail for Orlando and Greenville and for Toronto and all this kind of stuff, for Dubai. And it just really started to explode. And then, but there's a business side of this. And the business side is that it's no longer about being the best company in the world. In today's world, it's about being the best company for the world, because doing good is good for business. And so I created this business breakfast idea where I would travel around the country and I would preach at a church on Sunday and say, but hey, if you've ever wanted to invite your coworkers to church, but have been a little uncomfortable at the church thing, just come here tomorrow. We're going to talk completely about business.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I did that, and I did about 40 business breakfasts around the country. Mm. And I had all these business leaders coming up to me saying, hey, could you come speak to our organization? Could you come speak to our business? And one of the many things Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, taught me is to pay attention to unexpected opportunities.
Yeah.
And I went to my advisory board and went to Wendy and I said, here's the conversations I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all said, I think this might be the next season for us. I love being able to, or give you examples. So I love preaching on a Sunday, but tomorrow I leave for San Antonio to go speak in front of the Texas School Board Association.
Yeah.
And I love being able to go in those, the educational world, the government world, the business world, the church world. I love all of that because it's allowing us to have a greater influence. And so that, but again, all that is just, you just keep moving forward. You just keep moving forward. And then God kind of opens up these doors as you keep moving forward.
Carrie and I were at Gwinnett Church one time, and we'll never forget. This may have been part of your normal heart, and I think it is, but it was like, we want you to know that this is a place for people who don't have it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And that inclusive language of going, this isn't a place for people that have figured it out. It was like, this is a place, if you don't have it together, you're welcome here. Mm-hmm. And it's just part of your heart for what this whole Four thing became. You talked about Truett saying, pay attention to unexpected opportunity. Obviously God's opening these doors with Four, and, I just love this. I want you to talk a little bit about the transition, because it ultimately led you to your next book, which is What to Do Next. But all the things going on kind of in your heart and mind with, Lord, unexpected opportunity, people are calling, what are you doing? And then for our listeners, how do you pay attention to that stuff, you know, in real time? And mm-hmm. I know the book, we're going to get into a little bit of the book about that, but what was that like for you?
I think having people around me that I could process with, Wendy, our board, and again, when I say board, it's our friends, but our board, and mentors. And in my, with my dad passing away, it was now down to my mom and my in-laws. But just getting a sounding board that says, yes, there's risk here, but this looks like a good risk to take.
Yeah.
And don't forget, when I left, we were in the middle of a global pandemic.
Yeah, you were.
the church was still doing very well, even though we weren't meeting. I mean, financially, everything's... So I'm leaving, you know, all the... Not entrapments, but all the things that could convince you, hey, health insurance, you're getting paid. This is the first time in my career that I haven't gotten paid every 2 weeks or so, you know? And so... I think it looked like when I was leaving, oh, this is, you know, you're launching the Ford company, which is true. But if you were to ask me, what are you doing? I don't really know.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is the next season that I'm supposed to pursue.
Yeah, so good.
And I'm so glad, like 2 years later, if I had known now what I you know, didn't know then, it would have made things easier. And it would not have made me grow as much, though.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like God does kind of shields us from the future.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much. I mean, these last 2 years haven't, in some ways, these last 2 years have been the hardest 2 years of my life. And yet they've been some of the most fruitful growing years, because I've just been stretched and tried to trust God more and more, because now I'm on my own, other than, I mean, you know, Winnie and I are together, but I don't have an organization to lean on. We are the organization.
Yeah, you're it.
And then all the different rhythms, going from leading 60 people to going to a coffee shop by yourself. I mean, all these different things.
Yeah.
And even as an introvert, I'm an introvert, that, you know, I was lonely, all these kind of things that you go through. But it's just, we just knew, because in those ups and downs of these last 2 years, Winnie and I would look at each other and go, but we know this is what we're supposed to be. We know this is what we're supposed to do.
Let's talk about the What to Do Next book. It's interesting that both of the books you've written have come from like your real life journey of God going, hey, Jeff, here's what's next. Mm-hmm. And the Ford book came out of that with Gwinnett. And now you've got a book out called What to Do Next. I wanted to just, as I was listening, I do audiobooks. So as I was listening, I was making notes about some things that really struck me. I wanted to bring them up and get your feedback on them. The first is, life is not only about what you do next, it's also about who you're becoming in the process, and who you're becoming is more important.
Mm-hmm.
And just for our listeners, mostly worship leaders listen, and I know a lot of them are sitting there going, is this, God, is this what you want me to do the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
How do I know when to be, you know, I want to be open-handed all the time, but there's so many things that come around that, you know, and what you're thinking about, but oftentimes we think about more about what we're doing than who we're becoming.
Mm-hmm.
What were some things in your life that you've had to pay attention to just for your, you know, for you to be healthy?
I think understanding that God is more interested in whom I am becoming than what I am doing.
Yeah.
And I have a tendency to think, Lord, look at what I'm doing for you.
Right.
And I've had to realize God doesn't need me to do anything for him. He's going to be just fine, you know, and he'll... I remember Louis had his, you know, message one time where he said, Pharaoh decided to not do this. So God said, okay, I'm going to take that decision and still going to do what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So now I'd much rather be in obedience with God than disobedience with God.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think if I think when we ask God, God, what do you want me to do for the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
I think his response was, how are you doing today?
Yeah.
Who are you becoming right now? Because who you're becoming right now is going to influence all that. And I'm a person, Todd, who is way more comfortable in the future. I want to know where I'm going.
Right.
I want to cast a vision for what's currently not there. See that track of land? We're going to put a building on that and we're going to be foregoing that. That's how God has wired me. In this season, God has said, hey, that's great. That's a skill set that you have. What's going to stretch your faith even more is not living in the future, but living in the now.
Mm.
And one of the things that's really stretching me right now is my word for the year is be. Just be, not do.
Yeah.
And not vision and not future. And that may be something in the future. And it's a struggle for me right now because don't I need to do something? And that's not a plea to be irresponsible. Like I mentioned, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow and going to Texas. So I'm going to do that stuff. But I don't want to miss what God is doing in the now for me right now. And just, I think right now God's just like, hey, can you be quiet?
Yeah.
And can you just be still and let me build what you're doing?
Yeah.
And it's been so funny. My assistant texted me the other day and she said, what's going on? And I said, what are you talking about? And she goes, we're just getting all these requests for you to come speak. And what are you doing? And I said, I would love to tell you it's because of an email I sent or something I posted on social media. But I've taken a good chunk of time away from social media. So, and she goes, well, I don't know what's happening, but people are, and I said, I think I know what's happening.
Yeah.
God told me to be quiet.
I pulled this up on my phone. I was listening to Bono's memoir.
When he just started that.
And I wanted to hear him read it.
Yes,
so every day on my
doing.
Walk, I would listen. And not to jump the gun, Wendy, if you're still on it. But toward the end, he says this, the most important journey of them all is the journey toward being still. The vast difference between talking and listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, here's a guy who's met dignitaries. Fed the poor.
He was at the State of the Union.
Yeah, and he's going, basically what you're saying, just be still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David wrote about it and know that I'm God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some kind of like, you talked about momentum. The best form of momentum is an emotionally healthy you. There's something really, I think, supernatural about being quiet, you know, and being still and kind of letting the Lord take care of, it's his, you're his.
Right. And for me, that is a test of faith.
Yeah.
It is. I need to go out and do something. And again, there's this balance there. This
right.
is not a plea of being irresponsible.
Yeah.
Like I'm prepared for my talk in Texas this week. I'm prepared for my talk in Florida later in the week. I'm prepared. But those kind of came around. They just came to me. So there's this balance here. And some of us, sometimes we need to be more pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now for me, I'm not saying this is for everybody. For me, God has said, I just need you to be still and be quiet. I know you have bills to pay. We're going to figure this out. By the way, I can do this better than you can. And I think that's what my assistant was saying is like, what's happening? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And again, I get to be able to go, I didn't do anything. God's just opening up these doors. Ironically, I think too, let me give you a quick story. When our mutual friend, Kerry Newhoff, he told me when I left Gwinnett Church, he goes, I just want to let you know, you're going to be surprised how quickly people forget you. And I'm like, well, okay. And he goes, but that's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Because if they don't forget you, then you didn't really do your job as a leader.
Wow, that's good.
But there's something in all of us that wants to be remembered, which is not a bad thing. And so, another friend of mine said that he wants to have influence without notoriety. And I just thought that was really powerful. The challenge with being on a stage with lights, whether you're a worship leader, you're a speaker, you're a lead pastor, even in the business world. I mean, I'll be up on a platform this week twice in front of lights in a big crowd. That's hard on your soul if you're not careful and paying attention
to it. That's so good, Jeff.
So trying to find in those seasons of what I would call volume, what I mean by that is the volume of singing or speaking and the volume of influence, to still move to those quiet places where you can be okay with being forgotten is one of the most healthy things that you can do.
That's so good.
But you got to practice it, especially if that is something on a consistent basis. So that for me is just, I want to get better at being forgotten. And one of the things I'm doing with that right now, this isn't a forever thing, is I'm just taking some time away from social media.
Mm.
And it really makes no sense from a business standpoint, but neither are the results that we're experiencing right now either.
Amazing.
Now, I'm not suggesting, and I'm not, this isn't a guilt trip for anybody who's just, because I got to come out with a third book next year. I'm going to be posting about that. So this isn't a plea for anything. I'm just telling you where I am in my season. And I feel like God said, just be right now, be quiet, be still, be present.
Quick side thing about social. I went to a concert with my son, and I don't go to a bunch of concerts, say Farm Arena. I would say, Jeff, 90% of the people weren't watching the concert. They were taking selfies of themselves at the concert. And I was like, Lord, what have we become?
Right.
That's a whole nother podcast. Yes. Couple of statements, because I want to kind of land the plane here with somebody's at an organization, they're at their church, they're doing something, they have a title, they get up every day, they go to meetings. Yeah, there are a couple of quotes that kind of tie into each other. One, if there's not room to grow, it's time to go.
Mm-hmm.
That also, one Dr. Merritt said, I would rather leave a year too early than a day too late. What are some of the signs in your experience that, you know, for me, it was being in a meeting and dreaming about this other side thing I had started that God had me start. And I was like, I can make a massive impact with this other thing that I really am passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this, you know, but talk about, just to speak to anybody who may be wrestling with that, they're going, this isn't bringing, my heart's not coming alive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the process to go from there to maybe finding out some of your other passions and side hustle, or ideating about a path that maybe God's directing you toward by your unfulfillment where you are?
Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example back in my Chick-fil-A days. Again, if you had told me early on, maybe when I was in college, that you're going to be managing Chick-fil-A's regional and sports marketing, beverage marketing, and that here's the future, it's just amazing. I would have signed me up for that. So I had kind of the dream job. And yet here I'm listening to Wake the World and going to North Point, and then I stumbled upon this idea of video church, and I thought, wait, if we could help figure out video church, we could unleash this around the country, because what's happening in church world, this is true in business world, is many times leadership and communication are linked together, and that there are great leaders that are not good communicators.
Right.
And for example, there are great leaders in the church, but they're just not great preachers. What if we could unhook those and leverage a great communicator like an Andy, but leverage local leaders? And I thought, if I could figure this out, or if I could help figure this out.
Yeah.
And I just got fascinated with that.
Yeah.
So much so that when Wendy and I thought, we'll take a massive pay cut to help figure this out, because I didn't want to someday, we just drove a few days ago, we drove by Buckhead Church. If Buckhead Church worked, I didn't want to drive by that and think, oh, I could have been a part of that, but I was too afraid. And you have to be so fascinated with something that you're willing to push through the fear. The same thing was true when I left Buckhead to Gwinnett. Wendy and I both grew up in Gwinnett.
Yeah.
I have there's a story for another time about, you know, Gwinnett that just is very special for me. And when Andy said, hey, would you help launch a church in Gwinnett? I thought, oh my goodness, I would love to try to give back to my home county like this. So I was so fascinated, but I hated leaving Buckhead, but I was, in some ways, the way I put it into the book is, and I don't like the word ruin because it's not a full description of it, but in many ways, I was so fascinated and intrigued with the possibility of Buckhead Church that it kind of ruined where I was at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And when I was so fascinated with the opportunity of launching a church in our hometown, it kind of ruined Buckhead Church.
Yeah.
And then when I was traveling around the country and people were saying, hey, could you come and speak at our business or our church? And I thought, oh my goodness, I mean, I can influence more organizations. That potential kind of ruined kind of where I was. And again, I don't like the word ruined. I got to come up with a better word, but it was somewhere in that. I maybe dissatisfied with where I was.
Yeah.
And, but I didn't, I always wanted to make sure I was leaving for something versus running away from something.
That's good.
And sometimes you have to do that for whatever reason. Sometimes you don't leave the organization. Sometimes the organization leaves you. There are all kinds of different stories.
Mm.
But in our case, we always wanted to be going towards something. Yeah. Now, I would say this most recent transition, it wasn't as clear because I was just going toward an idea. Mm. But it was an idea that had been vetted enough that I knew I could figure out, with the Lord's help, some form or fashion of making it work.
You talk in the book about network and how it's your worth. That I, and I want to just real quick touch on this before we close. But I think a couple of things. Some of us don't realize that we can do anything. We really can. We can dream.
Yes.
And you talk about, you know, sometimes pride gets in the way of asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
And we get stuck because we're fearful, we're scared of the unknown. But just maybe speak to those who are listening and going, God, is my heart come alive, maybe doing something else, you know, and how do I discover something that I would truly be passionate about on the back end of where I'm at now, mm-hmm. you know?
To that point, one of the best decisions I've made is a decision to ask big.
Yeah.
And we talked about this before we got started. I was not a natural fundraiser, but over the course of 18 years, I had to raise money for 4 buildings and, I mean, you know, millions and millions of dollars. And again, it wasn't all me. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, but I had to be on the forefront of those building campaigns to a large extent. And I had to get comfortable asking people over coffees or in larger settings or smaller settings, will you give to this? And one of the best fundraising questions is you cast your vision and then you say, will you help me?
Yeah.
And then you just be quiet. And you're going to get one of 3 answers. You're going to get yes, you're going to get no, you're going to get I'll pray about it, which is also no. Okay. So typically, but what I discovered early on is that I was answering for people. What I meant by that is I would talk myself out of asking them, oh, they'll not do this, or they'll be, you know, they're not in a situation, or even though they have a lot of resources, I bet they weren't going to give this. And I thought, how arrogant is that for me to answer on someone's behalf? And so I came to realize what my responsibility was and what their responsibility was. My responsibility was to make the ask, to go, hey, will you give to this?
Yeah.
Or will you help me? Their responsibility was to provide the answer. And knowing that, I could deal with whatever answer they provided because I was true to what God had called me to do. This is your position. This is your responsibility. Make the ask. That's not true. That's not just true for an organizational position. It's actually more true for you personally.
Yeah.
So sitting down, I got this great networking question from John Maxwell. Sitting down with people, asking to tell you their story, and then say, hey, who do you know that I need to know? And will you contact them on my behalf?
Wow.
I've shared this with my kids. If you'll do that in your 20s and build a network of people, you'll be fine. Because I would love to tell you that more often than not, you know, what you know is more important than who you know. That's just not true. Now, what you know is important, but who you know makes more of the difference a lot of the time. And so building that network. And so when people ask me, you know, I've got to make a job change, or I'm looking for a job. Mm. What's the first thing that I need to do? Do I need to update my resume? That's important, but no. Do I need to post on LinkedIn? That may be important, but no. The most important thing that you can do other than pray and all that is to get out your phone and write down the top 10 folks that you can contact and ask, can I take you to coffee? And network. And, you know, apparently we're all 6 degrees away from Kevin Bacon. So that is networking, right?
That's funny.
So building that network is it's in many respects for me, it's like life insurance.
Mm.
You know, when you lose that job or you have that career transition, that network is important. If if you need life insurance, you really want it to have it. So it's really building that up. So that whole network thing is really important.
Our purpose for a worship circle is that leaders would know they're loved and not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we end here because what you just said is that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of us realized how not alone we are, but just in ending with this idea of you're surrounded. Even you being here today, we've reconnected. Mm-hmm. We were in the same ministry stream for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. But there's this feeling I get with you of, man, we're together. Mm-hmm. We're in different lanes. We're headed toward a common destination.
Yeah.
And it's just powerful when you see that. And sometimes you don't see it until you email or text mm-hmm. and say, can we have coffee?
Sure, sure.
But I love to end here because this is it. We're not alone. Mm-hmm. And with what you have to do next, what is in your next season of life, if you're listening to this, know that you're not alone and you can reach out to friends and pray about those people. I've often gone through my contact list and said, okay, Lord, who do I need to reach out to right mm-hmm. now?
And I would tell you this, one of the great things about technology now is you can text people and just encourage them, or you can shoot. Yeah. One of the things I'm trying to do right now is just shoot videos and just
I
go,
do that too.
Hey man, I got nothing other than just encourage you.
So good.
And I would say this, a better word for network is circle.
Okay.
Which you're leveraging. A better word for network is community.
Yeah.
And that's your community. And there are different levels on your, but I think your contact list on your phone is a snapshot of who is in your community. And I understand the lonely leader aspect. I understand that. Yeah. Loneliness has been a part of this 2 years for me, but I'm not alone.
Right.
There's a community of people around me. I just have to look up.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this and you feel like, yeah, Jeff, but I am alone, then you're part of Worship Circle and Todd's here and they're here to serve you, which is why I love one of the many reasons I love what you're doing.
Mm. Well, man, thank you so much to reconnect today and have this conversation. Where can people find you if they want to read more books, get more resources?
Yeah, just go to jeffhenderson.com.
Okay.
It's all there. And then I have a weekly email that goes out, and hopefully that's encouraging for all of us. And just jeffhenderson.com. And then if you do read my books, I kind of stole this from Bob Goff. My cell phone's in the book, so just text me.
That's a whole nother, how do you manage all that? That's great though. I love that you're personal and that you do that. You've always been that kind of a person from thanking notes on. So I appreciate that about you.
Well, it's good to see you again, man.
You
so
too,
excited
Jeff.
About what you're doing. It's incredibly important. But again, thank you because you played a huge part in getting me to do what we've been doing the last several years.